listening to the Investigative Journal.
We're going to get to the bottom of this illegal jailing of Susan Lindau. As we speak right now, Susan Lindau, 42 years old, an ex-Seattle Post intelligence reporter, former congressional aide, and also a cousin and to former White House Chief of Staff Andrew Card. There's a lot of things to this story we're going to get to. She sits in a New York correctional facility in jail right now, held, there's no conviction. She's being held for psychiatric review, and she's not allowed to talk to the media, and that's why she's not on the show right now. And so we've brought on Mark Vilk, we've brought on Jay Fields and Janet Phelan, three activists who have been trying to get to the bottom of this, trying to help her get out of jail. And what I'm going to do is start with Mark Vilk. Mark, you can act kind of, are you there, Mark?
Yes, you can act kind of like
as a moderator with me, and you can help introduce Jay Fields, who knows a lot about this case, as does Janet Phelan. All three of you really driving forces, her only hope right now maybe to get out of jail. She's short on money, no attorney. The government attorney, of course, is an idiot. The government defense attorney they had given her, court-appointed attorney, is not representing her properly. So, Mark, why don't you just tell our listeners about this story, just set the stage, and then also bring in Jay Fields and Janet Phelan when you think appropriate. Go ahead.
Okay, well, Susan Lindauer was a congressional and senatorial aide to various representatives, and as such, in the 1990s, she found out that the bombing of Pan Am 103 over Lockerbie, Scotland, was not done by Libyans, as the United States is insisting. They know that's false. They know that's a lie, but it was done by Syrians, and especially one Manzer al-Kassar. And actually, there is a report done on that, the Interfor report done by some retired intelligence agents of various countries, and they found that it was the CIA that instigated the bombing of that aircraft to get rid of the McKee team, which is a team of American intelligence agents that found out about various evil doings of other American intelligence agents involving drugs and terrorism and stuff. So the idea was to kill off this McKee team, and so the CIA arranged with the Syrians to put a bomb on that aircraft, and that's what blew it up. Of course, the United States government wants to cover this up. Now, Lindauer found out from a person whom she's calling a CIA agent, I don't know if he's actually an actual agent or an asset or what, but found out that Syrians were involved. Now, I don't know if she knows that the CIA was involved, but anyhow, she was talking about that, and of course the government did not want that particular thread to come out in public, because when people would pull on it, then the whole CIA thing would come out.
Okay.
So right then she was making herself unpopular with the U.S. government. Well, then subsequently she was a reporter for the Seattle Post-Intelligencer.
Correct.
And she was also well acquainted with a number of Middle Eastern diplomats, including ones from Iraq, connected with the Iraqi UN delegation. And now Susan's cousin is Andrew Card, who until recently was the White House Chief of Staff.
Yeah, so she's got family in high places.
Yeah. So she's got that connection, which turns out to have been regrettable for her. And she got to know these various diplomats, I suppose, through her work as a government aide.
Okay.
So she began communicating, well, she began serving as what's called a diplomatic back channel, in other words, an unofficial communication channel between the government of Iraq and the government of the United States. Now, on this little website that I made, which is at radioforhouston.org, and that's spelled radio and then the digit 4, and then Houston, Houston.org, and then /Lindauer, capital L, then lowercase INDAUER.
Okay.
So on this little website, there are scanned pages, which Jay Field very expertly scanned.
And Jay and Janet are with us. So if you two are there and you want to say something, just go right ahead.
Yeah, maybe we should introduce them now.
Why don't I? That's a good idea. Jay Fields, are you with us?
Yes, right here.
Yeah, I know you've been researching this story in depth, and I want you to, Mark is kind of acting as a co-moderator with me. Feel free to join in, and I know Janet Phelan, you're there?
Yes, I am.
And feel free to jump in anytime, but let's just try to keep it organized. Mark, go back and start, and just wanted everybody to know all three of you are with us and are ready to help get this woman out of jail. I guess there's no other way to put it. Go ahead, Mark.
Yeah, I might say Janet is the one who found out about Susan Lindauer's persecution and told me about it, and she's been researching it, and then she got in contact with Jay Fields, who is a tenant in Susan's home in Washington, D.C., I guess. And so Jay has been working hard collecting evidence and trying to help Susan.
Well, listen, let me just get this back to where we're at. Susan was a reporter. She was a U.S. congressional aide. She's cousin to former White House Chief of Staff Andrew Card, and that's going to be interesting why he didn't help her. I know she sent letters to him. We're going to get into that. But we're at the point where she knew information about Pan Am Flight 103 being an inside government job. She's now grabbing some information, I guess, regarding the war in Iraq. Let's get to that point.
Let me kind of give you Susan's perspective on the Lockerbie Pan Am situation.
And this is Jay Fields. Go ahead, Jay.
Right. Her main connection there was Dr. Fuse, who, by some accounts, was the CIA station chief in Damascus for a number of years. She met him when she was a staffer, I want to say for Senator Leslie Braun, and they had a number of, there's kind of a coffee clutch group of people that would meet a couple times a week and talk about different things. And she heard him say that he could identify the actual people who put the bomb, who were responsible for the bombing of the flight, and that they were Syrians and not Libyans. Now, when you say the government did this, I think it's oversimplifying what we mean by government. It's sort of like the word "they" can mean lots of things.
Okay.
And her perspective was that there was a kind of a minority element that was working on an agenda to deal with hostage situations in the Middle East, and were dealing in drugs and this kind of thing, and that there was another group of people who became concerned about this and who are actually coming back to testify to the Inspector General or somebody such as that and try to at least get some more light on what was going on.
Okay.
They were supposed to be on that flight, and these people who were going to be told on went to their Syrian connections and said what needed to be said for the bomb arrangements to be made. Now, that was her take on this. Now, it happens that the people who were supposed to be on that flight at the last minute switched flights. And so that they are intact, and who knows what the Inspector General inside the CIA did with that information. But clearly we had a couple of different agendas going on there. So that's her take on it. Now, when we talk about back-channel diplomacy, it has kind of a bad history. And National Review kind of tries to downplay Susan's role by pointing out the checkered history of back-channel diplomacy, you know, everything from the people who misled Chamberlain to Kennedy's having a bad source in the Soviet Union who told him not to worry about missiles in Cuba.
So I guess if I could interrupt, it's just safe to say, just to expedite this, that she had information regarding Pan Am 103 the government didn't want released.
Well, it depends on what you mean by government. Again, she was giving this information not only to her cousin, but also to people she knew who were in the intelligence agencies.
Okay.
And now people are trying to pretend, or at least people prosecuting her are trying to say that she's delusional and saying that she was an asset. She's never claimed to be an agent. She's always said that she was trying to be an asset.
Okay.
And maybe a little bit, she'll even say, I was. It wasn't just trying, I was. But the difference here is that the people who were getting that information were people who were professionals skilled in analyzing intelligence, even disinformation. It's different than somebody who's a political person who has his own connection and doesn't know how to, you know, screen it against other information, if you follow me.
I follow you. Go ahead.
Okay, so this wasn't simply back-channel diplomacy. This was somebody who had the connections with people in the agencies who was trying to tell the politicians, look, don't ignore these people.
Okay.
And the politicians had their own agenda, as we found out.
We're going to come back. I want to start with Janet Phelan when we get back. Janet, I want to find out how you found out about this story, and then we'll continue on with the strange case of Susan Lindauer, who sits in a New York correctional facility. We'll be back on the Investigative Journal.
Oh.
Okay, Janet Phelan, who's with us, another one of the three people on our guests here today, trying to get Susan Lindauer out of jail. Heard about the story first. You're an independent journalist, researcher. Janet, tell us how you heard about the story and tell us how we can get her out.
I found the story was emailed to me by someone, the one that was written by Rick Anderson. The title is Susan Lindauer from Spy to Psychotic. And what the story details was first an attempt to incriminate her on these spy charges, the spy charges being reduced to a technicality having to do with lobbying, which is not really so serious. But what alarmed me most about this was the fact that she was remanded to Carswell Federal Prison Mental Hospital for observation. Now, I know from other situations that I'm aware of that when they attempt to psychiatrize a dissident or activist, they're essentially attempting to detain that person for a very long time. So there are only two ways in this country one can be detained against one's will, either a crime or the perception of a crime, or the move towards psychiatric commitment, which many of us know was used rather heavily in the Soviet Union to detain dissidents, sometimes permanently. So when I realized that Susan Lindauer had been remanded to Carswell for psychiatric observation, I got quite concerned. Very briefly, a couple of other people that this happened to. The wife of John Mitchell during Watergate was sent to a psychiatric hospital after she started calling reporters and just spilling the beans. And she was sent to a psychiatric hospital very shortly thereafter she died there. Another person who this has happened to more recently's name was Michael Morrissey. Michael Morrissey is a geneticist. He was working for the U.S. Army, and he was researching mad cow disease. And he came up with some conclusions that the official story about mad cow was all wrong and that there was government complicity in this. And he went to his superiors. Okay, Michael Morrissey was told at that time to leave the military. He left the military. He was then arrested for desertion. And very shortly after, he was remanded to a psychiatric hospital. And I met Michael Morrissey in Iowa City a couple of years ago. And there was an attempt at that point to very heavily drug him. He was able to get out of the facility intact, but his experience there was pretty horrific, as he related to me. So I am aware that there have probably been others like Michael Morrissey, but I was certainly aware of his situation.
And so what you're doing for us, and I really thank you for this, you're kind of showing that this is a pattern, that basically what happened to Lindauer, who now sits in this correctional facility without being convicted, has now been there for 6 months, and they first dropped the original charge, and now she's held for the unregistered lobbyist charge.
Actually, there has only been one charge.
Okay.
She never was charged with espionage. She never was charged with treason or anything like that. The only charge has been that she was an unregistered agent.
Now, that why is it stating that the charges were dropped?
I
have a report from the prosecutor's office based on the allegations that she was receiving $10,000 from the SANE's intelligence unit. Then they dropped these charges.
Right. What they're saying is that she received money from Iraq, and actually those were expense reimbursements. They paid her to go to Baghdad to meet with them.
Well, here's what happened, and this is basically from the research I found, just to clear it up legally. Prosecutor was going to bring an indictment down. She had it written up. They didn't have enough to bring it, so they dropped it at the last minute, and these charges were dropped in March of 2004. So anyway, I did want to get back to Janet, though, right now. Janet, you were trying to basically paint a picture that this is stuff, you know, this kind of thing has happened before. What they're doing is keeping her there, saying that she is, what I heard was that they're saying that she's had severe mood swings in the past. Do you think they're painting the wrong picture about her psychiatric condition?
What I understand, there have been some records that have just been located in the last week. Susan Lindauer was in pre-trial counseling with a psychiatrist. Was it a psychiatrist or psychologist, Jay?
Yeah, the psychiatrist, Dr. Kennedy.
Okay. These records, the medical records have located, and it paints a picture of somebody who is really not pathological, really basically a non-pathological person who is experiencing a situation where she is being accused of things that are not actually factual. And there's also in the records, I believe, Jay, some indication that there are attempts by people, even that early on, to paint her as mentally ill or psychotic.
And a lot of her family were in the Republican Party, and it looks like they were indeed, for whatever reasons, trying to make those claims, including her father.
Okay,
but
looks like
the doctor found that she was not psychotic.
Well, we're going to get back with Mark Bilk, Jay Fields, Janet Phelan on the Investigative Journal. Okay, we're talking about Susan Lindauer, the journalist who sits in jail right now, and the three activists that are with us trying to help her get out. We're going to go back to Mark Bilk where we started. Mark, we left off. We know you told us that she had this information about Pan Am Flight 103. Now she supposedly has got information that there were no WMD in Iraq, and she was going to maybe go forward and talk about this. Is this another reason she sits where she is right now?
Well, yes, I read over the three letters that she sent to Andrew Carr that Jay had scanned in, and these are on that website. And the first one, she says that Iraq, she reports from the Iraqi diplomats, that Iraq is very willing to have weapons inspectors return to Iraq and demonstrate that Iraq does not have any weapons of mass destruction. That was on March 1st of 2001. And then on July 3rd of 2001, she describes how she has founded a committee to get the United States to lift economic sanctions against Iran, Libya, and Iraq. And she says the Iraqis tell her, the diplomats tell her, that if the U.S. lifts, apparently Russia was making inroads in working with Iraq to exploit its oil resources to help them develop it. And she says, but the Iraqis say that they would much rather work with the United States. However, the United States has been putting on these economic sanctions on Iraq. So if the U.S. would lift their sanctions, then the Iraqis would much rather work with the United States than with Russia. Now, in the third letter, 9/24/2001, that occurred after the September 11th attack, Iraq is first of all saying they had nothing to do with 9/11, but at that time the U.S. was bombing Iraq. And Iraq says that they will negotiate with the U.S. under any circumstances that the U.S. wants. So now, Susan's problem here is that she is very naive about the United States government. She doesn't realize that the U.S. government always wants to have an enemy so that they can make war on that enemy, which, because war is very, very profitable for the weapons companies. And since there's always a war on, dissidents can be kept under control. You know, don't criticize the government. Don't you realize we're fighting this great enemy? No, the enemy was the Soviet Union, it was North Korea, it was Vietnam, it was various countries in South and Central America, and then it was Libya, and now it's Iraq. So there's always an enemy, and the United States always does things to create that enemy. They'll put dictators in place and use them to control the populations in these various countries, and then sometime later, they'll frame these dictators as the great enemy that must be destroyed. They did that with Saddam Hussein. They did that with Khomeini, et cetera. So they did it with the guy in Panama. So in this case, the United States has been wanting to attack Iraq for a long time, and Israel has been wanting the United States to attack Iraq for a long time. And the Israelis were quoted in various media articles saying that.
Right.
And so with her amateur attempts at diplomacy, what she didn't realize is that the actual attitude of the inner circles of the U.S. government were that they wanted to attack Iraq. It was going to make a lot of money for their cronies. And the neocons, who stole both of the last two presidential elections, are very closely allied with Israel, with the Likud party, the Zionists, which are kind of Jewish fascists, basically. And the state of Israel wanted Iraq to be attacked. So the U.S. government had all kinds of motives to do this, and poor Susan was being very naive when she thought that she could stop these attacks just by getting the truth across to the U.S. government. The U.S. government already knew the truth.
Exactly.
That Iraq would be willing to have weapons inspectors and negotiate and everything.
Good way to explain it. So she basically, she finds this out, tries to go to the rescue, and then she's punished.
Yeah, let me insert here that Iraq seems to have been pretty desperate in trying to talk to her and was very hopeful that with her family connections that they would be able to have some influence.
I know, Jay, you've compiled a lot of information on this. Do you think that Card actually sold out his own cousin? I mean, what is going on here? Card?
But I don't know enough about him to make a real educated answer. I do suspect that she put him in a rather compromising position. There's kind of a long history with relatives of people in the White House causing problems for people in the White House.
Yeah, and this is a huge story. I mean, if you look at this, a cousin of Andrew Card, White House Chief of Staff, has information prior to the Iraqi war. There are no WMDs, and they just didn't listen to her.
Yeah, and
that's,
you know,
huge.
The thing that I also would have to draw from that was that if you were one of her contacts in the intelligence agencies and you knew that she was doing this and she told everybody what she was up to, and you knew that she had a cousin in the White House, there's no way that people watched her doing what she was doing. You know, there's no way they ignored this.
No.
This was for them to suddenly play dumb and say, oh, I didn't receive her letters, or, you know, I never knew about this. It's disingenuous. But,
well, then what happens here, and just let me try to put this in perspective for our listeners, then what happens is they paint her to be a spy. They paint her out to be collecting money from the enemy. They say she received $10,000, which she denies. And then they turn the table on her. Now, listen, now we're sitting years after the war knowing there were no WMDs,
knowing that what she was doing
is telling the truth. I mean, and now she sits in jail, and they're making her out to be a nutcase. I mean, this is incredible.
One of these letters in passing, the Iraqi delegation asks her if we will send the FBI to Iraq to help them eradicate or at least search out any al-Qaeda elements in Iraq. Now, this was prior to March 2001, you know, many months previous to the World Trade Center bomb.
Well, I want to tell you three people, Mark Bilk, Jay Fields, and Janet Phelan. I hope you guys don't drop this, because this is a powder keg case. This case needs to be told to the American people, and I know why they have her in jail, because she is a definite liability to the Bush administration. This shows right to the top, a cousin of the White House Chief of Staff had information there were no WMDs, and look at how they're doing. You guys keep this up. I mean, try to get her out any way possible. Keep telling the story till you can't talk anymore.
Well, now, not just her, but these were people. There were people in the agencies, the Defense Intelligence Agency, the CIA, the State Department's Office of Intelligence and Research. There were old hands working on these subjects who knew the truth and were trying to tell the truth. And another little story that Susan told me, she told me that Dr. Fuse was Colin Powell's neighbor.
Okay.
And that at one point they had a conversation.
Now, who's Dr. Fuse again?
Dr. Fuse was her contact ostensibly in the CIA, the previous station chief in Syria.
Okay.
And he told her, or so she told me, that Colin Powell had some history going back to My Lai, that he was the original investigating officer in My Lai, and his original report was that nothing happened.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we're used to thinking of Colin Powell the hero.
Yeah, he's one of
the boys. Let's for a second consider that maybe he rose to being a general because he was a very good yes man and a very good bureaucrat and good at looking good in public. And, you know, if you read his book, he tries to sound like he was the hero of the first Iraq invasion, but you know it was Norman Schwarzkopf. You read his books and he tries to make Norman Schwarzkopf sound like a blubbering fool.
Yeah. Oh, well, let me get to Janet here. Janet, are you still with us, right?
Yes, I am.
You know, you tried to talk, I know, to Susan. Tell us her personal situation now. I know she can't talk to the media. Tell us what's going on with her in this correctional institute.
I have not spoken with Susan Lindauer.
Okay.
Jay Fields has. It needs to be stated that the government is going to court, I believe it's May 4th now, with an attempt to have her committed. Now, if she's committed, there will never have to be a trial, and they will have her in detention for as long as they want to.
And she's a political prisoner. Wasn't there someone, one of you may know this, wasn't there a court-appointed psychiatrist that already has said she's not insane?
Yes, yeah, that's Dr. Kennedy, and I just happened to find in some of the papers that Susan left me. And I have to tell you that as a tenant of hers, I was sometimes annoyed to be hearing so much about her problems. But she left me a whole bunch of papers before she disappeared to
Carson. When you say a tenant, you lived in one of her apartment or what?
I rented her basement.
Okay.
And still do.
Okay.
And she, anyway, in these papers I discovered, here are the records of here's her medical records from her pretrial counseling, signatures from Dr. Kennedy and signatures from Dr. Tedesca. And Dr. Kennedy makes a summary that she's not psychotic. He does talk about how her dad went to the prosecutors after her arrest and asserted that she was delusional and that she had threatened suicide. And, you know, nobody that I know that knows her has ever, she might watch too many soaps, she may sit and smoke cigarettes too much. She was pretty quick to, we all have our issues. But
well, listen, yeah, let's just stay with it. If they want to show, you know, if the government has their dirty hands on you and they give you a court-appointed attorney and they want to prove that you're insane and they want to do it without the media attention, without anybody following, they're going to do it. To me,
yeah, well,
you, or anybody listening.
Yeah, they probably
along
just
with
want
Susan.
An easy way out.
I'd like to say something here.
Go ahead, Mark.
Hear about the reports that Dr. Kennedy wrote on her. He's a court-appointed psychiatrist. This is before she was incarcerated. There are about 16 pages of this. The only thing he could come up with that was wrong with her was that she sometimes exhibited hypomania. Now, I looked this up in a medical dictionary here online, and hypomania is where you have an elevated mood, increased activity, decreased need for sleep, racing thoughts, and the like.
You know, that sounds just like me right at this moment.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah. Now, unlike mania, like, you know, manic and then depression, that kind of thing, hypomania differ in that it does not cause significant distress or impair one's work, mm-hmm. family, or social life in any obvious way. And it says here, hypomania can be difficult to diagnose because it may masquerade as mere happiness. In other words, this is a diagnosis for happiness and enthusiasm. It's a psychiatric diagnosis for which it is appropriate to prescribe drugs.
Now, what's this hearing coming up, Janet? May 2nd, you said, or May 4th?
May
4th. I believe it's May 4th.
2 o'clock. I checked with the court.
Okay.
2 o'clock on May 4th?
Where at?
2 o'clock on May 4th.
I would like to say briefly concerning psychiatry and the uses of psychiatry. A psychiatric diagnosis is a matter of opinion. In most psychiatric situations, there is no lesion, there is no accumulation of white blood cells to fight an infection. It is an opinion only. Now, the other thing that needs to be noted is, according to the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual, which is the Bible for psychiatrists, there is no category of normal. Anyone who walks into a psychiatrist's office will walk out with a label, and none of the labels in the DSM are a label of normal. So you walk into a psychiatrist's office for any purpose whatsoever, you will walk out with a diagnosis of some kind of aberration. So in this sense, psychiatry is very useful if one wants.
And what you're getting at is that it's easy for the government to manipulate the people that are trying to put her away, manipulate
exactly.
a favorable psychiatric evaluation for their cause.
Exactly.
They also gave her drugs.
Go ahead.
When she was arrested, before she was allowed to talk to the press, and before she was released on bail,
mm-hmm.
they gave her, Dr. Rosky prescribed a drug. I'm sorry, forget the name of the drug, but it disoriented her and made her feel drunk. And I think it has a lot to do with the way she was portrayed by the press after her arrest as being a little off balance.
Yeah, and who knows what they can do to her in there. I mean, they can about do what they want while we're speaking right now. She's incommunicado. I mean, they won't allow the press to talk to her.
Right.
I don't know if, when's the last time you did talk to her, Jay?
This morning. She gets out on the phone 2 or 3 times a day. In fact, she even tried to call us at 3 o'clock. I was trying to connect up with you all and I had an incoming call. I'm pretty sure it was her.
Okay. Well, maybe we can get a conversation with her one of these days.
She says she can't talk to the press because they forbid her. Now, how they can do that when
well,
she
tell them I'm not
convicted.
The press. Tell them the press is the New York Times. Tell them we're we're just basically friends trying to help her out.
Greg,
yeah.
you're the kind of press that they really don't want her to talk to.
Well, just tell them I'm not depressed. We got to play their game, you know. Let's be deceptive like they are. Go ahead. But we don't want to get her in trouble, so I mean, but that's not right anyway. But she can't. Do me a favor. She does need one thing. We got about a minute here, and then 4 minutes after. We do need to get her an attorney that's competent, and I know some attorneys, and maybe we can. That's really a key thing right now. We need to find her somebody that's going to help her, some way, somehow, because the court-appointed attorney isn't. Not to say that that's going to be the final solution, but it's one step in the direction. So maybe. We can put the word out. If anybody's listening, knows somebody that's going to work on her behalf, not the government's, to help her in this upcoming May 4th competency hearing for her sanity or insanity. And boy, they would love to just show she's insane, because at that point there's no trial and she can't get on the record and state that she had this information, more information showing that the Bush war is illegal. And this is coming from a cousin of the White House chief of staff.
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah,
people.
This is a way of essentially disappearing her legally.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, and you guys are right there. You're the only ones that are going to keep this thing in the news right now, so please do, and I'm going to try to help get an attorney for her. Anybody else out there, let me give out the number. Maybe somebody out there want to talk to you guys. We got a few minutes at the other side of this break. 800-313-9443. How long has she been in jail right now?
That's October,
months, I think.
Since October.
Right. She was sent in for 4 months of observation, and of course that 4 months came and went, and no release.
All right. We'll be back on the Investigative Journal. What's happening in this hour is very clear. The government and the powers that be are framing Susan Lindauer, keeping her away, hidden in a New York correctional facility. No conviction, basically. They're holding her on psychiatric observation. And the reason is because she was insisting prior to the Iraqi war that there was no WMD from sources that she knew. She was writing letters. I mean, you have documented letters. We got to get this website out to Andrew Card prior to that time, the Iraqi war. I believe prior to that, that there were no WMD, or at least consider the fact that what she was finding out. And in fact, afterwards, in March of 2004, then, when she wasn't going to keep quiet, Susan being a journalist and also a former congressional aide, they turned the tables on her and said she was an Iraqi spy. And she now, then they charged her with espionage. That was dropped. And then they got her on a charge now of working as an unregistered lobbyist, and now she's being held for psychiatric observations. Wow. I mean, that doesn't get any, if you're looking for political prisoner, there's one right there. What's the next step, I mean, for you guys to try to help her?
We've got to get her a lawyer. We've got to get her a good, knowledgeable, aggressive civil rights lawyer who is not afraid to confront the government.
Janet, do you have any last words?
Well, I want to thank you very much, Greg, for getting this on the air. My perception is there's been an attempt to hush this up, and if there is enough light shown on their abuses, human rights and First Amendment abuses of Susan Lindauer, that maybe they will back off, and she does, yes, need a lawyer.
Yeah,
thank you very much, Greg, for.
Oh no, thank you, and do me a favor. I have your number. You have my number here. Let's make sure we do an update on this story in May, so we follow this, so she doesn't get put away. And I'll do everything I can to help find a lawyer for you that can help in that area in New York. And I wanted to get to Jay Fields, though. You were her tenant. You know, Susan. From your opinion, was she a stable person?
Yes, and certainly she could become very. Zealous, I would say almost, if there was, you know, she believed very strongly in some of the things that I believe in, and she had some religious convictions.
Nothing wrong with that. I mean, that's what
this country's
all about.
I mean. I don't think she was entirely naive. I think she knew some of these risks, and I think she really had the courage of her convictions in going out there and trying to make a difference.
All right, let me just tell you three, thank you so much, and make sure you keep in touch with me. We'll do an update on this right prior to that May 4th hearing. That was Mark Philp, Jay Fields, Jay Phelan. Thank you.
Thank you
very
much,
get
Greg.
Susan Lindauer out of jail. She's sitting there as a political prisoner. My listeners, do anything you can. try to get her out. At least Google her name, and let's get this thing, pass this around, pass this interview out. I'm all out of time today. I'll be back tomorrow, same time, same place, 1 o'clock on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Until then, good afternoon.